Today's sponsor is Audible.com, who has more than 180,000 audiobooks and spoken word audio products. Get a free audiobook of your choice at www.audibletrial.com/shark. Hey, welcome to Movies, Films, and Flicks podcast. I'm your host, John Lasso. Joining me, as always, are my co-hosts, Mark Hoffmeyer.
Oh, man. I can't believe I made this pod. So last night, I went to go watch a Hateful Eight screening.
Oh, nice.
With our fan, Kurt Russell, and the projector broke down because, you know, the specifications on how it should be screened. So they had to call the theater down the road. They brought in their projector, which was about a three-hour process. So we all just kind of waited, right? Then that projector broke down, right? Oh, then they had to fly in a guy from New York to work on the projector. That broke down. So then we all just watched Escape from New York on my phone.
Nice. I think that might be the preferred way of watching that movie, Quentin Tarantino.
You know what kills me is I plugged my phone into the projector and it played it. Just, you know, and everyone left kind of happy. You know, we all forgot that we had been there for, you know, close to 18 hours, and we just embraced some John Carpenter and Kurt Russell.
Yeah, I think that's a prime Kurt Russell, really. So wait, yeah. What was the preferred or recommended format, according to Tarantino, for The Hateful Eight? Wasn't it 70?
70, yeah, 70.
Yeah, the thing is, even before digital came about, 70 wasn't even the norm. It was 35 millimeter. So I'm not really sure where Tarantino is, or what he's hoping to get out of out of shooting in 70 millimeter.
Now, you were a projectionist for probably 8 years, right?
That was a long time.
Yeah. So, all right, what do you think about this?
70 millimeter looks good. It's just not very practical from a movie theater like perspective. Like, the, you know, 70 millimeter is obviously bigger than regular 35 millimeter. It takes more time to put together. A lot more things can go wrong. It was just not really worth the effort. I mean, it looks good, you know, but it's just like, you know, not, it doesn't look that good.
And it's a 3-hour movie, so if things go wrong, you're going to be there for a long time.
Oh, God. I don't even want to think about it. Yeah, just show the movie. Just watch it in digital, guys. Like, it's not that big a deal. Loving Good, what format are you going to watch Hateful Eight in?
Like, I don't know. I was just thinking of Peter Stormare because we did our Devils podcast not long ago from Constantine. And I was thinking, when you brought this up, 8 millimeter, because he was the bad guy in 8 millimeter.
Okay, yeah,
he's always the bad guy. Last Stand, Hansel and Gretel.
I mean,
like, I'm sure that there's like one movie where he's the good guy and people just totally forgot about it. Like, they didn't even realize it was him.
Was he in Armageddon? You see the Russian in Armageddon? That was kind of crazy.
That might be right,
because he was good in that, right? He was just kind of crazy.
Are you sure he wasn't like the asteroid or something?
Yeah. He was a storm. Peter Stormare was the asteroid in Armageddon.
Yeah, who knew?
He's, I love that.
Man's got incredible range.
Basically, he just went.
Anyway, since we got that out of our system, I think it's time to start the podcast like we usually do with listener questions. Mark, I think you got questions this week, right?
That's right. So the first question comes from Chris Kelly, and he asks,
"Wait, he's got two first names? I don't trust
him." Yeah. You know,
come on.
And he asks, let's see, let me pull up the question here. Who are your favorite non-human characters of 2015? So I'm going to do one which I don't think you guys have done, but I can't really talk about them that much. But I'm going to say Bing Bong from Inside Out. And, like, I can't say anything. I can't. Like,
I haven't even seen that movie.
It, like, I can't say anything about Bing Bong, but he was like the main character. As she grows up, she kind of didn't use her imaginary friend anymore. So he kind of just gets pushed into like the nether regions of her mind, and he helps out the characters in Inside Out.
You know, it's good that he did that he didn't stick around in her like active psyche, because if he did, she'd probably be schizophrenic, like talking to herself and listening to voices.
Yeah, exactly. Even if it was like him chilling, like people would think she's crazy. So he did a good thing. He took one for the team. And then the next one, I don't know if you guys have picked this, but I'm doing The Man Who Can't Breathe from Insidious 3. Just because we've talked about this before, but he possesses that girl and she does the leg kick. She has cast on legs.
Oh, the cast with the horrible cast thing.
The crunchy leg kicks is what I call it. And he's like this absolute jerk that just likes to play with his food, and like he's just a jerk. He's terrible. Like he's just a jerk. I mean, the red-faced demon's better than him, but he wasn't in this year. Lipstick demon, I'm sorry. But
for our listeners, back in episode 18, we talked at length about this, the girl kicking her leg with the cast in Insidious 3.
I just love Insidious villains. So those are my two.
Yeah. I had one. This might be kind of stretching the term of non-human, but he's not human to me. I'm going to go with the Vision from Age of Ultron.
Yeah, he's not a human.
Yeah, he was like a cyborg, right?
Yeah.
But the reason why I chose him is just like that quick little joke of with him like holding Thor's hammer.
Oh yeah.
it was like here you go, here's your hammer, and everybody looks over at Thor is like, oh no, he didn't.
And Thor's like, he picked it up like a coffee cup.
And Thor's like,
No. He was like Uncle Dan, and he was picking up his 3-year-old niece's play tea set, teacup,
You know what's great is that joke was set up like in the beginning of the movie where they had that great scene where they're all gathering around trying to lift Thor's hammer, and then like Vision comes along just like, hey, here's your hammer. I'm like, ooh.
But you know, it was priceless, albeit like more subtle when Chris Evans budged the thing, and Thor looked a little nervous for a sec, like his eyes widened, like whoa.
Oh, yeah, no. That was funny. I like that. Yeah, no, but Vision was great, man. And then like, yeah, I like me some Paul Bettany, and.
I mean, I don't know. We'll see how the character kind of progresses in the future Marvel movies. But, I mean, for the most part, I'm kind of neutral on him. But I love that little gag. that just did it for me.
I got to see him on Cap 3. So,
Paul Bettany?
Nice. Yeah. I can't say anymore. It's probably a spoiler.
Okay. Yeah, just erase that from your mind.
They're not going to hire you back for Cap 4 if you talk about
this. If they do a Cap 4. Yeah,
he's in the trailer wearing a suit, so.
Yeah.
Sorry to ruin your joke there, Lazbath. My bad.
It's all right. My jokes are ruined from the beginning.
So for my pick, I chose the character that I think made the movie of his namesake, and that was Chappie. And, you know, Chappie was a movie that, you know, it got a lot of flack, I think, for the storyline and making this robot cop reprogrammed as, like, you know, some kind of gangster who talked funny. And people kind of took it the wrong way. But I really like just the way they took his developmental psychological journey and his innocence and his discovery of his surroundings and human relations. And I thought Chappie was amazing. I mean, what'd you guys think of Chappie?
I still haven't watched Chappie. I need to see.
You haven't seen Chappie?
Yeah, you're like a big time Chappie supporter. I feel like I've heard it all. Like the other, I feel like I've watched it because I've talked to you so much about it.
I haven't seen it.
I was revving up Chappie even on on Reddit the other day.
Yeah,
people were talking about, yeah, you know, Chappie was a lame movie. I'm like, yeah, but the psychological and developmental story of the character. They're like, man, you're right, but the plot sucked.
Yeah, you've been banging that drum for a while, so I feel like I know. Like, you know how I get on movies and I just talk about them? Like, I feel like in a bar, if someone's like, hey, you ever watch that movie? You'd be like, yeah. But, like, probably not because I just talk about it all the time. I need to watch it. And then I also added, I didn't know if you guys were going to do it, but I did Blue the Raptor from Jurassic World. He's the only good part of that movie. And I watched that movie again, and I think I hate it more. But he has a character arc, and you remember his name.
I thought someone was going to go with Ava from Ex Machina.
See, I thought one of you guys were, but yeah, like Ava from Ex Machina, Louise from Spring, the jerky following creature from It Follows. So there was a lot of good non-human ones, but I kind of wanted to go a little bit different because I didn't know what you guys were going to pick. But I mean, Ava, Louise, I think Vikander should be nominated for an Oscar because like her role was really sly in that. I dug her. And I think the creature from It Follows should be nominated for an Oscar too.
I'm gonna give no credit whatsoever to the creature and it follows.
Well, that was I just like that as a joke. Like, and the winner is.
Like, what I would call It Follows is I would call It Follows, even if we were talking the decade or our millennium, which everyone's like, oh, the last 1,000 years? No, the last 15 years. But of our millennium, that might be the best character that functions as a plot device.
Yeah, for whatever the characters need to do at a certain time.
Yeah, like that thing was a plot device.
Yeah. There's something on the wing.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, it's actually just like that. That thing wasn't a character. That thing was just a plot device. It was perfect.
So this is we'll talk about this on we'll talk about this in the year the Random Awards of 2015. But we'll talk. I don't want to go into a discussion about It Follows. But yeah, so I think we summed up that question pretty good here. Chris nailed it. Like, but yeah, Bing Bong.
Yeah,
watch Inside Out. Your heart will be crushed.
Yeah, for sure.
Was that really an emotionally heavy movie?
Oh my god. I don't even want to talk about it, man. I'll just lose it.
Just answer me this. Was it heavier for you than it would be for the children who were the target audience because you know that you've already lived through it kind of thing? Like, was it?
I don't know, man. I feel like anybody who watches it. You're right, but the one thing I worry about with Pixar films, they are kids' films, but adults kind of get annoyed when they focus on kids. Like Cars, everyone's like, man, like, you know, some like 30-year-old guy like in a coffee shop, you know, like, man, that Cars movie was just for kids. It's like, well, yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever, man. Toy Story was loaded with adult innuendo, man. Bo Peep and Woody.
Yeah.
I mean.
But that Cars movie, like, it sold like $1 billion worth of cars, which can fund their movies for another 10 years. So, sure, I'll take it.
Sure. Inside Out's kind of funny because, like, it's a good movie, but I hesitate to recommend it because I just don't want to do that to whatever. Yeah.
It's like recommending Martyrs to somebody, you know, or like I Saw the Devil. You know, it's like you're going to be wrecked.
Well, it's like, hey, you know what's a good movie to watch on Thanksgiving? Schindler's List. Give it a watch.
Well, you realize you have a lot to be thankful for. That's for sure.
And then follow that up.
I'm thankful that I'm not in that camp.
You know what would be the worst movie to watch is The Pianist, because he's like sitting there like dying for food. You know that scene with the can, and you're like laying on the couch with like your belt unbuckled and your shirt up. You know, you're literally sweating turkey out of your pores. Oh. And you're watching Adrian Brody like try to drink from a can that like of peaches, and you're like, every drop that gets spilled, you're like, oh my gosh, but you literally have turkey hanging from your hair. Like, you know, like that's a terrible movie to watch on Thanksgiving. All right, cool. So the next question is, all right, this one comes from Will DeCook. Remake stink. However, what movies do you want to see be remade? And I think we've talked about this before, but I want to watch I don't want 13th Warrior to be remade. I just want them to add some scenes to it. Because it's there. Like, it's like a train track that's like 90% done. Like, you're still dead, but it's close. You know what I mean? It was like a $160 million movie. I don't even know how much that cost, like with inflation, maybe $200 million. But like the sets, the practical sets, the acting, like the crew themselves, that battle where the glowworm, whatever, the guys busted through their camp and they were riding together on the horses. Like, it was a very good looking film. And I loved it so much when I kind of watched it again recently. And I just think it needs a little bit more. Like, if something like, give it more, you know, remake it with 10 minutes of footage, pull a George Lucas. And I think it's there. So that's my movie, 13th Warrior.
So I actually have two, and I really wish that I knew that I was going to do this when I encountered this stuff. And this is from Reddit, but I really want to give credit to the people who found these ideas on Reddit, but I don't know you people. So if you're listening, I'm sorry. I wanted to give you credit, but I didn't think of it at the time until just now. But someone was making a good point that, like, Spawn, when Spawn came out, starting Michael Jai White in the 90s and with John Leguizamo as the Violator, it was a dark superhero movie, but it was at a time when are like nowadays we know dark superhero movies, the new Batman movies, Man of Steel, we're even the Watchmen before all them. We are now in an era where dark superhero movies, we kind of have an idea of the formula of how to deliver them and have audiences swallow them. Whereas back in the 90s, people had never done this before, really. This wasn't touched on a lot. I mean, look at Dolph Lundgren's Punisher. Yeah. No one really liked that except for Super Dolph fans. And then this is even darker and even weirder. And so I'd say Spawn. And before you react to that, I want to give you the other one too. And that's that someone was actually saying that they want to see Willow redone as a trilogy with Peter Dinklage as Willow Offgood.
I just – I don't know.
Oh, wow.
I don't know.
I couldn't get enough Willow, okay? That – now, I'm not going to say that Willow crammed too much into its story. But Willow, everything Willow had in that can of worms worked. And the little snippets that we got of the two-headed dragon that came from the troll, right? And the trolls and the castle and the evil witch and like Mad Mardigan and the little brownie pixie people. One of them was Kevin Pollak, who I loved. But like all those little snippets you get of this fantasy world, like they all had just enough. But I'd love to see that world expanded upon. And in a world of Game of Thrones, who can't get enough of Peter Dinklage? That's but right. Spawn and Willow is a trilogy. React.
Yeah, I'm all for Spawn with the same cast. Michael Jai White could still do it.
Yeah.
toss in Constantine.
You want to see Constantine redone?
No, with Spawn.
Oh, I gotcha.
And throw in Hellboy. You know what? Make an Avengers with Hellboy, Spawn, and Constantine.
You know, it's interesting you bring up Constantine, because if you took the skeleton of Constantine, if you took the script and maybe changed all the character names and changed some of the plot devices, you could probably turn Constantine into a Spawn movie.
Wait.
Because Spawn sold his soul to come back and do his work. He's regularly dealing with the devil and demons. Like, I wonder if you couldn't literally just do a rewrite of Constantine and change the characters and have John Constantine replaced with Al Simmons.
And add Drive Angry, Nick Cage, Drive Angry character.
I still haven't seen that.
Dude, that's terrible. But we have the Expendables there. Like, this is – if all these universes, Marvel, DC, they're all combining universes.
Oh, man.
So you're talking about, like, basically the Infernal movie – universe movie with Drive Angry, maybe get some Hellboy in there, some Constantine.
What about Ghost Rider?
Ghost Rider. This is the greatest movie ever made.
Yeah, but before you know it, it'll be like the new Avengers movie where each character gets 3 minutes of screen time.
I want this movie. Mr. Gorbachev, take your wall down and
make this movie.
Make this movie.
Lazabeth, how do you feel about Willow or Spawn?
I don't think he'd fit well in that universe, but I'd watch it.
You don't think that Spawn would fit well on Willow?
Or vice versa.
I don't think you could recreate that magic. Do you, Lazabeth, of Willow? Just like the randomness of it and like Mad Mardigan. Like, it's just such a cheeky thing. Like, I don't know if I'd want to see like a good drone remake of it. You know what I mean?
I think the appeal of Willow is like or part of the appeal of Willow is kind of the campiness of it a little bit. I mean,
yeah.
It's just campiness is something you can't really, you know, intentionally create.
Yeah.
It's just if they were to do like a remake of Willow, they would never be able to recreate the magic because like, you know, like, well, let's just try to make it like campy like the first one. But you can't intentionally make something campy. If you do, you just make it bad.
I got to tell you, no one will ever be able to call anyone else Peck as well as Val Kilmer.
And like, there was that sword where the guy had where it's just basically over his hand. It was like the most impractical sword ever. But yeah. Like, I had that toy.
It's like, okay, it's like saying like, oh, let's also remake Princess Bride.
Like,
there's no reason to do that.
I feel like The Rock is just going to redo all these and wreck our...
Oh, the poor Rock, man. Like,
wait,
he can't help it if he's the go-to guy for that.
Wouldn't it be hilarious if like The Rock was in the remake of Princess Bride, but instead of Andre the Giant's character, he was given like Inigo Montoya.
what if they made it like Nutty Professor 2, the Clumps or whatever, where The Rock plays all the characters.
Wait, I want a Nutty Professor movie with Dolph Lundgren.
I'd watch it.
With Dolph Lundgren like playing the fat grandmother and the father and the
yes,
kid.
Yes. Yes.
Mark, you know, I'm really not kidding. That's just ridiculous enough that if you went on Kickstarter right now and just wrote three sentences, I'll bet overnight you'd have $100,000 for that project.
I mean, he's doing
so many people would go nuts for that. You're like, I haven't even talked to Dolph yet, but if we can get $1 million, he might listen. If you commit to $100, you get a DVD, and Dolph will come to your house for a holiday dinner
and watch Rocky IV with you.
Oh, watch Rocky IV.
Good movie.
I have my Drago Pop right next to me. Actually,
hey, I must break you. Oh, nice. If you give me money for Nutty Professor with Dolph.
Well, I mean, he's not Russian. Well, Drago is not Dolph. Never mind.
Yeah, close enough.
Yeah, I was using props on a podcast. Sorry, guys. But I love the idea of Spawn. Willow, I don't know. I just can't see it. That's my answer.
If it had the right back, like, let's say that they had Peter Jackson, but he gave it the attention that he did the Lord of the Rings trilogy, not the Hobbit trilogy.
You know what reminds me of him? Remember when Gus Van Sant was doing Good Will Hunting 2 in Jay and Silent Bob? And he's just counting the money. Gus Van Sant's like looking through like a big bag of money. I feel like that was The Hobbit. Even though I watch all three of them and I own them on Blu-ray, I feel like Peter Jackson was just like, New Zealand's funded for another 10 years. You know, like.
As if he was just like the emperor of New Zealand.
I mean, he pretty much is. Let's be honest here.
Yeah, the prime emperor.
Yeah.
The great Gugga Mugga. what do you got, Laz? What should be remade?
Okay, this one, it's kind of coming out of left field a little bit. Well, not really. But
Angels in the Outfield?
Yeah. That wouldn't be a bad remake candidate. But Rookie I'm going with On Her Majesty's Secret Service.
Ooh.
The George Lazenby James Bond movie.
That's the one that I always forget exists.
Yeah. The thing is, like, a lot of people, and, you know, I would agree, too. Like, a lot of people say, like, On Her Majesty's Secret Service, like, it's actually better than most people give it credit for. Like, the story is fantastic.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It shows Bond in, like, in a more human light. Like, mm-hmm. He's not, like, some cold, martini-drinking, killing machine. Like, you know, he actually, you know, has feelings.
He wears puffy shirts, too. Yeah. Like, I mean, frilled shirts.
He gets married. I mean, his wife dies at the end. And, like, you know, Blofeld, he's not like campy Blofeld. He's like, you know, intellectual, like practical Blofeld. But the only thing that ruins Honor Majesty's Secret Service for me is Lazenby's acting. Like, it's just terrible. I mean, to be fair to him, like, I think it was like his first acting role.
Yeah.
But
I think he lied his way into it, I think.
Yeah. It was just like, you know, I really liked the story, but I just, like, Lazenby's acting just kind of ruined it for me. I wouldn't mind if the Bond producers like kind of remade Honor Majesty's Secret Service. Like, just call it a remake. You don't need to.
Can we just keep the exact script and recast it?
Yeah. Actually, you probably could.
I nominate Chris Pine? Even though he's young, I want Chris Pine.
You know, my wife said the guy who plays Rob Stark would be a good Bond.
Yeah.
Rob, okay. I got you.
And he was in Cinderella. He was like suave, like. He's in Game of Thrones. He can, you know, handle action.
Yeah.
He's British. He's younger.
Honestly, like, there were the action scenes on Honor Majesty's Secret Service really good, too. Like, there were, like, the ski chase and, like, the... Mm-hmm.
And he throws a good uppercut.
Yeah. Wait a minute. The ski chase, was that a nod for... Did True Lies... Was True Lies giving that a nod with the ski thing in the opening act?
I mean, it was a spy.
You can't really own a ski chase, though.
Yeah.
So...
You know what's kind of crazy, though? When you said remake on Her Majesty's Secret Service, my blood got boiling a little bit.
Yeah.
But you know what? It took me like 4 installments to watch that movie because I kept falling asleep. But then I thought about it later and I loved it. It's like the weirdest thing. Like when I was watching, I was like, ugh. But when I thought about it, I like loved it. Is that, you know what I mean? Ever happened?
For me, I enjoyed it, but I can't like it because of Lazenby's acting. Like that's the main reason. maybe I'm being unfair to him, but like, I feel like if like someone like a Daniel Craig or even like a Pierce Brosnan was given that story, like that movie would be like so much better in my eyes. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, the movie's decent. It's just not a Bond movie that I find myself watching like or going back to watch, you know, repeatedly.
Yeah.
It's no GoldenEye.
No, GoldenEye's the bomb.
Oh, yeah. Wait, you did. I was saying this earlier, and I didn't want to interrupt. What about throwing Sean Bean a mulligan and having him play Bond in a remake of On Her Majesty's Secret Service?
I'm down.
I'd watch it. Yeah.
Let's do it. Let's put him in there. Put him in right now. And then kill him at the end.
That'd be a great plot twist, actually.
Yeah, wait, Bond, so he marries Emily Blunt, right? And then he gets killed, and then she becomes the next Bond.
Somehow.
Yeah.
Yeah. MI6 is like, well, they killed your husband, so we're going to recruit you.
That's right. All right, Broccoli, sign us up.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're writing that script.
Although there's speculation that, like, because of the way Spectre ended, like, the next Bond movie is going to take a lot of inspiration from Her Majesty's Secret Service, but these are kind of unfounded rumors. But.
Is Craig done, or is Craig doing one more?
I mean, if they dropped a Brinks truck full of cash outside his house.
I thought he just didn't even want to stay in shape like that anymore.
Yeah, but I mean, look at the other Bonds, like Connery and Roger Moore, and like they weren't exactly ripped,
especially towards the end of their Bond careers. Like they were just kind of sucking it in, like the whole movie.
Just put a toupee on him.
Chicken not stirred.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
You know, honestly, with the way Spectre kind of turned out, with the way it ended, like, I hope Craig doesn't come back, because Spectre was kind of, it felt like a great send-off for Craig. You know, I'd be disappointed if he came back. I mean, not that he's a bad Bond. I think he's, like, my second favorite Bond. But, yeah, I don't think he should come back. I think he's done. So
this depends on the money.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Connery came back purely for money when he did Diamonds Forever.
Yeah.
And that was a terrible movie.
He dropped Blofeld into a chimney.
Or he drove through that alley going in on one side, and he came out on the
other side.
I was like, come on.
That had a good song, though.
Diamonds Forever?
Yeah.
I don't remember it.
Diamonds are forever.
No. Live and Let Die is my favorite.
If you guys want to listen to our podcast number 6, I sing all the Bond themes. That's it. The whole podcast is I just sing every single one of them.
So, I think that answers the questions.
Yeah. And then also all your Bond questions, too.
Yeah, pretty much. All right. Moving on. Let me good. I think you got the topic for us today.
I do. And so today we're going to be talking entirely about movie fight scenes. And when people bring this up, the first thing they might think of are martial arts or kung fu movies, or they might think of Rocky movies. But we are going to try and capture the entire breadth of possible movie fights, not including silly things like thumb wrestling or whatever, but really like the whole range of fights and their impacts and how we can be affected by them. And we really are covering a lot, and we're not covering a lot of the obvious things. We don't have Bruce Lee. Somehow between me and Mark, given our earlier comments, I'm shocked that neither of us brought up Rocky IV.
Yeah.
But either way, but we mention these things a lot. You know that we love some good movie fights. This is less about technical fighting choreography than it is about what the fights mean, how the fights looked, how the fights affected us, what they did for the movies. Yeah. Like,
were they plot devices? Were they just action scenes? You know, stuff like that.
There you go. And so I am going to start actually by introducing a fight that is what I said most of these won't be, but it's because there is one guy who I think could, if he just got more screen time, really transform action movies a lot more. And I'm going with Scott Adkins and the sum of his fights in Undisputed 2. And this is when he was really introduced strongly, like with a face and a character name that we'd remember as Yuri Boyka, to the movie world. And this guy, he does all his own stunts. He's not doing any wire work. He's doing crazy, crazy maneuvers. He's doing flips. He's doing kung fu theater stuff, but he's like 5'10" and 185 pounds of pure muscle.
The one, can I pop in two observations?
Yeah, go.
I was halfway through the clip because it's about 8 minutes long. And I noticed that it has 18 million views, closer to 19, actually. It almost has 19 million views, Scott Adkins doing spin kicks. The second observation is a lot of blood and spit fly from people's mouths in Undisputed 2. If you played a drinking game for every time someone got spin kicked and did like a bleh, or like their mouthpiece flies out, you're going to be pretty drunk. But that was just my other observation. There's a lot of blood flying from blood, snot, and mouthpieces flying from people's mouths in these fights.
And what Mark's referring to is that if you were to type in Undisputed 2 fight scenes, just about the first hit that you'll get on YouTube is an 8-minute clip, which is the sum of all of the fights super cut together in YouTube. And it's pretty glorious, in my opinion.
I mean, it's 19 million.
Yeah.
So, like, but what this guy's in, like, it's like, also, like, the choreography that he has, like, Michael Jai White is in it. I don't know the other stuntman's name, but they're like – it's like a very well-rehearsed dance with amazing athletes. And, I mean, I got dizzy watching him throw all these spin kicks. But what's his signature, like 520 with like the back – like you think – what's his famous kick, Levin Good?
So a lot of times, like – so Jean-Claude Van Damme's trademark kick. I'll just use that as the example because we all know that that's a jump spin kick and it's a 360.
Yeah.
Imagine if Van Damme did that. But his kicking leg misses, and then the other leg, when it comes by the guy's face, then kicks that guy in the face. That's essentially what Scott Adkins' kick is. It's like a 540 jump spin check crescent kick.
Yeah, the first time I saw that kick was in Undisputed 3, and I remember like going, wait, did that just happen? Like, did that? Like, it's like the dude's a crazy athlete. And, Undisputed 2, it's about prison fighting, right?
Right, yeah, because it goes from Undisputed 1, that was Wesley Snipes. He's, like, in prison, and they have this underground boxing thing going on. Kind of like the movie The Condemned, which is, like, a newer free-for-all almost version of That Meets the Running Man. But, you know, it was Wesley Snipes versus then a convicted killer who was the boxing champion of the world heavyweight, and it was Ving Rhames. And so they set up a fight, and it was one fight. Whereas in Undisputed 2, it's a bunch of fights. A fighter goes to jail. It's Michael Jai White, and he tries to fight Boyka, but Boyka is all into this MMA kind of stuff, and he just crushes this boxer. Then the boxer learns the MMA, and Michael Jai White somehow wins.
And he snaps the leg.
Oh God! Yeah, you know that could have been more intense, to be honest, of all the things in that film. But it still hurt, and you hear a little crunch.
You know what I liked is how the final fight between the two guys they adapted. Like Adkins really started to drop like a lot of leg kicks in there to like take out the plantar feet of the boxer,
right?
And there were some. I'm not saying like you know they definitely threw choreographed kicks. They didn't set up their kicks, whatever, but. There was a strategy to it. So, like, you know, beautiful fighting like this can't be technical on screen just because of the way it works. But, like, I loved how each fighter, like, adapted. I loved how Jai White actually threw straight punches in a movie, which was kind of nice. And I think it worked out really well, like, with the whole him becoming a complete fighter. So, it built to something really kind of cool.
Lazabeth, have you seen these movies or no? A lot of people haven't seen these. They were straight to video.
I saw the first Undisputed. I haven't seen Undisputed 2. But I do want to say, as far as Scott Adkins goes, you watch his fighting in these movies, especially like when he throws a kick. Like it feels like if this wasn't a movie and this is real life, like he would only need like one kick.
Yeah.
Because he's throwing like these kicks really, really hard. You know what's crazy? He's probably holding back because like this is a movie, so he doesn't really need to actually fight anybody. But like, man, he's like, it's like. These kicks are coming fast, and they're hitting hard. Like, it's just, like, I just don't think I could ever, like, survive, like, a Scott Adkins. Like if he were to, like, if someone were to tickle, like, Scott Adkins, and he just kind of, like, lifted up his leg and, like, just hit me in the back, like, that would put me in the ER for, like, a month.
Yeah, there's a scene I think in Hot Shots Part 2 when in the TIE fight where the TIE fighter kicks off some guy's head. I think,
yeah,
like I think Scott Atkins could actually take off somebody's head.
It'd be like really clean too. It'd be like a really clean cut.
Yeah, just like, no blood. Yeah. Just whoop.
Man.
You know what's cool about Scott Atkins too, and this might be why his YouTube video for the Undisputed 2 fights have so many views, is that he has kind of this. It's not underground, but it's purely internet. It's not Hollywood. But he has like a YouTube following, and if you search around for him, videos of him doing rehearsals, not fight scenes in movies, but rehearsals of choreography, he is kind of like the modern day Bruce Lee, but he's completely humble instead of, you know, Bruce Lee. He earned it, but Bruce Lee was very full of himself. And so Scott Adkins, he explains a lot of the theory behind it. He'll explain to the cameraman why this is hard, kind of for the behind the scenes things, but he's just like a cool guy and he's answering questions from people. It's a lot like if anyone's been to conventions and seen Ray Park step out from doing his autographs. He's really friendly. He'll do a simple stunt. He'll explain a little bit how to do a lightsaber fight. Whereas Scott Adkins, though, I mean, you almost feel this Bruce Lee-like magnificence when he explains something, talks about power, and kicks someone 15 feet back when they're holding a heavy pad for one of his sidekicks. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, search around for him. Watching his training videos is a delight. And for anyone who doesn't know who he is, he was Deadpool during the fight scene at the end in X-Men Origins. Even though that movie was garbage.
Is he going to be...
And Ryan Reynolds looked ridiculous.
Is he going to be the new Deadpool movie?
What's that?
Is he going to be in a new Deadpool movie? Or,
I don't think he's involved with the stunts because those stunts got heavy into wire work and CGI. Oh. So they don't really require someone with a lot of that skill. But I haven't seen in the trailers of all the trailers they had for Deadpool, there haven't been a lot of real hand-to-hand combat scenes in them. So it's hard to really infer if they benefit from someone like Adkins or not.
I do remember when he was in Expendables 2 and he had a fight scene with Jason Statham. I was like, this is going to be the greatest thing ever. And then they cut it kind of short. I was like, no!
Almost all the fights in Expendables 2 were cut way too short.
That could have been, like, epic, you know? Because this is random, but I was listening to the Spy commentary the other day, and the stunt coordinator on Spy was part of the commentary, and he said that Jason Statham's the number one actor he's ever worked at who gets stunts. So if those two could have scrapped for like 5 minutes, like in the raid, like let's say they make American Raid 2, skip the first raid, and the Raid 2 is just like a total fight movie, like that, and the fights are all like 10 minutes long, I would love to see that. So that's my thing.
Nice.
All right, cool. So my next fight, the fight that we're doing next is totally different, but it's the Craig Debo fight from Friday.
Nice.
And
elaborate on that a little bit. Okay. I think a lot of our viewers are young.
So in Friday, you know, it's basically Craig, played by Ice Cube, just deals with this massive bully played by Tiny Lister, Tiny Lister's what, 6'5"?
Oh, God, he's huge.
He's huge, you know, 300-some pounds. And then you have Ice Cube. You all know Ice Cube. But it builds to this part at the end where Debo had beat up this woman. And Ice Cube's sort of girlfriend kind of gets in his face. But Debo, this is an absolute jerk. He hits the woman. So Craig steps up. And earlier in the film, Craig's dad kind of gave him a lecture like, hey, shooting people doesn't make you tough. You know, you'll take a beating, you'll lose some, but you'll get back up. He's like, your fists are the only weapons you'll need. So Debo pulls a knife. He drops a knife. Then Craig pulls a gun. And his dad's like, yo, just fight him. Fist bite him. If you lose, you lose. But at least you fight him. And like, I'm getting all goosebumps talking about this because I love this scene. And then so Craig puts down his gun, and then what follows is like the sloppiest fight, but it feels like, you know, it feels like a fight that would happen, like, because, like, you know, Chris Tucker's given you know, talking through the whole thing, but I just love how, you know, Debo's like, yo, get knocked out like your father used to, and his dad's like, this is all the protection you need, and I just love that, like, when Debo hit Craig, you felt it. And, like, Craig didn't really know how to fight. He was, like, rushing him. He wasn't doing it right. He actually got beat up. But then he took a brick and he hit Debo right in the face with it. And, like, a brick finally in a movie. Like, if you watch Broken Arrow, Christian Slater, I think, hits John Travolta with a crowbar about 1,700 times. And, like, Travolta feels fine. But, like, this brick, like, whacks him in the face. And then, like, Craig just, like, unloads on him, like, beats the living daylight out of him. And then, like, Chris Tucker comes out. And, like, I just think it's cool that this whole movie built to this. It was like, he, you know, in that movie, he kind of had, like, you know, he wasn't a grown-up. He wasn't, like, a man. You know, he was kind of, like, he just wasn't there yet. And, like, he that's, like, the night, like, that this dude, like, became a man and, like, you know, I just like that two guys, like, fist fought. Like, you know, Debo put down his knife. Like, he, you know, like, Craig hit him with a brick. That's not really fair. But, I don't know, I liked it. I liked it. It was just a good one-on-one fight. Everybody was watching. It was just like, it was like a guy growing up. And I love that this film built to that. And I liked, like, the message. Like, when I was a kid, man, like, you know, I was always down for a good fight. Like, you know, I never thought about using a weapon. So, I mean, you know, like, I don't know, I liked it. I thought, when I watched this, I was like 12, 13. I watched this fight scene. I just thought it was like the coolest thing, like what the dad was saying. And I don't know. I just think it's a good fight. And you don't really expect these kind of fights that we're going to talk about. I know there's They Live and The Raid and all that. So I'm not saying it's the best fight, but I just think it builds to a really good conclusion of a good film. And so that's why I liked it.
And I agree with one of your earlier points. Like, the sloppiness of this fight really adds to the authenticity of it. You know, like, Debo, like, he's just a big guy. Like, he's just using his size. Like, he's not, like, I mean, he's not using, like, professional techniques. Like, he's not sweeping a leg or anything like that. And Craig, like, and Craig is, like, you know, yeah, he's just a guy. But yeah. Whatever. Yeah. Like, I love the part where, like, he just kind of rushes him. And, like, Debo is just, like, beating on his back. It was just like, what are you doing?
And Chris Tucker's like, Craig!
No, like, what's great is that you were just rooting for Craig, like, the whole time, but you had no idea if he was going to win or not. Like, that was, like, the best part of that fight. Like I don't know if he's going to win, but I'm going to root for him. That doesn't happen a lot in movies. Like, you know, whenever, like, you go into a fight scene, like, well, he's going to win, but I want to see how he wins. You know, on Friday, it's like, man, he might not make it out as alive.
Yeah.
So.
And, like, even if he would have lost, it would have made a sense for the plot too, you know.
So this was like a grown-up version of the meeting the bully at the flagpole at 3 o'clock.
Yeah,
in like in the movies of like the '80s or so. And the thing is that it's like that analog that you just made of growing up. And it's like, yeah, and what you said about the sloppy fighting, the bully never really has to fight. And it's the same thing that we tell our kids sometimes, or the same things that we were told as kids, and the same things that we see in these movies, is that sometimes the willingness to defend yourself against a bully, and not even the ability to win against them, is all it takes to get them to stop being a bully. Yeah. Because they're not used to having to enforce their words. They're used to people just kowtowing to their size. And so, yeah, like, you know, Tiny Zeus Lister, his character, Debo, like, how many punches was he really throwing? Like, in the movie, you see him throw a few, but they're the people who are so scared of him, they just sit there frozen until he uppercuts them. And by the way, for all you kids listening, and sorry to the parents for the one bit of profanity, but if you haven't seen this movie, you probably know the line, "You got knocked the fuck out!" That's this movie. And you might have been listening to this podcast thinking, what is this movie? I know Ice Cube, he's that old guy from 22 and 21 Jump Street, but no, he was our age once. Yep. and you probably know that movie line, and this is what it's from. It's Chris Tucker saying that after Debo would uppercut someone, and then it would cut to a shot of them flying through the air, like in slow motion.
Like that Fresh Prince when that guy got thrown out of the house.
Pretty much, man. But yeah, so all the clumsiness, it made a lot of sense. And what you said about the dad too, like it really was the one part of that whole joke of a slapstick comedy movie that brought it together and made it real. You know, the dad said, you know, you win some, you lose some, but even if you lose, you live to fight another day.
Yep.
I'm using his voice. I like him from Boomerang, by the way. He was the crazy dad in Boomerang.
Gave me goosebumps, man. I love that fight scene. I think it's great.
John Wood is
great. But I mean, when you first let me know that you were going to be picking this fight from Friday, I was kind of thinking like, oh, man, like I was hoping you picked something cooler. And then I rewatched it. And of course, I haven't seen this movie in well over a decade. The movie's from, I think, 94. And when I watched it, and again, the talk from the dad and the serious tone and the way it developed, that was a real movie scene.
Yeah. And it was a good, you know, I just like that. I like that it was a fight that that moved the story along. You know what I mean? Like, it just, it felt great. Like, it was just a good fight. So that's why I added it in there. So.
And like you said, like, that movie really did build to that fight. Not in the sense of a Rocky movie, but it did.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I loved it. It just, I don't know. It's a good fight. So, it, like, yeah.
Nice.
It was good.
All right. So for my second fight, I chose Hector versus Achilles from Troy. And that's Eric Bana in the best shape of his life against Brad Pitt in the most buff shape of his life. And it is Phalanx without the people at your Phalanx, fighting with spears and short swords and shields. And I thought this was about the most exciting thing ever. But what really brought it together for me was the way it built up. Because in Troy, earlier in the movie, Achilles' cousin disguises himself as Achilles and fights one-on-one against Hector, Eric Bana, and he kills him. So when they go to face off one-on-one, Achilles and Hector, he takes off his helmet, his biggest protective measure, and throws it on the ground and says, "Now you see who you're fighting." And already it's like badass tone is set. Like, they put on the greatest percussion background music for the fight. It was subtle. Like, it captured you. You kind of got chills. But, I mean, come on, guys. Was this not one of the coolest fights ever?
I watched it again today, and it was just rehearsed. Hey, Sean Bean was in it and lived, actually. He actually survived an Odyssey in Troy. But never mind. I mean, it was incredibly rehearsed. And you know what? Watching it again, I got really mad. Because you're sitting there watching Orlando Bloom, like, watching it, looking worried. It's like, this is because of you. Like, your badass brother.
That was back when he was a wuss.
And, like, his wife is kind of like, you know, she knows what's going to happen. And you know that scene in Last of the Mohicans when, was it Unca, I think, runs up and tries to rescue that girl and he dies? Like, it's a futile, like, it's a, he's going to die. And so you know that Bana is not going to walk away from this. And so he goes out there and he's like this good dude, a great warrior, a great leader, like a good brother. Like, whose brother would do that for him? And he goes out and, like, he actually slices Achilles across his plate once, which makes him look incredibly shocked, which I thought was pretty cool. And, but, like, it's just, like, honorable, man. There's, like, a glory to it. But then you start watching him, and I hate what the director did, is he started making Eric Bana, like, more tired and more tired and more tired, and then Brad Pitt was fine. And you're like, oh, no. Oh, no. Like, it just it plays with your heartstrings, too, and it makes you mad.
Yeah.
Well, the tiredness was because of a lot of the direct blade hits to the shield that Bana endured, that Hector endured. There were three direct hits. Achilles' trademark jumping straight jab to the shield. That's a lot of impact to one spot, and Bana took two steps back afterwards. It probably winded him. There was the same thing with the shield earlier. There was when he shoulder butted him through the shield and knocked him back, and then it was when he fell to the ground over the rock. So a lot of things happened that literally would knock the wind out of him.
Yeah, and I mean, and plus you're swinging a sword and carrying a shield, and you know what I like though is they added that rock in there, because then people can be like, well, if it wasn't for that rock, so like that's a, you know, he's gonna lose, but you can always be like, well, that rock kind of messed him up a little
bit. Achilles was like, get up, Prince of Troy, I'll not let a stone steal my glory.
Yeah, it's just, you know,
but like that.
Oh, sorry, go ahead. You know, one thing I really love about this fight is, like, I really love the shield work. That's not something you get to say a lot.
Yeah.
As far as my team go, I love the way that they use the shield to just kind of parry, like, the hits, to kind of use it as a melee weapon. Brad Pitt uses it as kind of like a fulcrum for, like, his spear or whatever. I think fulcrum's the right term, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah,
whatever.
Sure.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, when he put it behind his back and, like, shoved it forward, then swung it around.
I'm like, I don't know if that's practical, but it looks cool as hell. I'm like, man.
Well, when he put it over his back, he eliminated any overhand slashes at close range. He made it, and if you stay close, you have to jab, but you're too close to go for a jab when he stays close. So that's the advantage to having the shield over your back.
I kind of wanted to run in there and just cheap shot Achilles, though, because I was just like, hey, man, let this guy be. Like, I was like, don't kill the Bana.
Yeah, but your earlier point, Mark, about, like, Brad Pitt just not getting tired, I think that was just part of his character, because wasn't Achilles, like, part god, like a.
Not in the movie.
I mean, he's
in the movie. It's referred to so randomly.
That's right. They didn't really like use the mythological influences in the movie. I forgot.
He was human, but he wasn't human.
Right. I mean, he was known as basically the LeBron James of his time.
Yeah, so. Or before Ronda Rousey, before that happened.
Yeah.
John Jones, the John Jones of his time.
There we go.
Yeah, he only lost by DQ. We'll do that. But no, I for me, I'm not the biggest fan of Troy, but I love that scene, man. I think it's well executed. I think there's they build to it. Like you said, John, he kills his cousin, and then you like both of the characters, but then you they kept cutting back to Eric Bana's family or Hector's family watching him, and you're like, oh, and there's so many, you feel all the feels while watching it.
Even before the fight started, when he just pulled up and, all the bowmen, Troy could have just shot the hell out of him with arrows. But they were honorable because he was calling out a duel and he's just yelling at the top of his lungs, Hector! To the point that you think he'd be hoarse. He was at a concert or a club yelling all night. And the family looks nervous. They're looking at each other. Hector's putting on his armor. His wife is hyperventilating before he's even stepping outside. Even the draw from the time that Achilles' chariot comes up and he gets off and starts yelling Hector, that's 8 minutes of tension.
Yeah.
And then of course when the music starts for the fight and he's moving a cross between a ballerina and a damn leopard, he moves so gracefully, Achilles in this, or Brad Pitt that is in this, and you hear the hum of the steel after the contact like a tuning fork. People put attention into this like it was some, major cinematography-based scene rather than a fight. They made this fight a major theatrical event, in my opinion.
And it wasn't like a cut, 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 edit, edit, cut, 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 cut. They let the camera linger.
Oh, yeah. There were a lot of long shots, true. It was – God. I mean, you say well rehearsed. A fight like this, it has to be – and, one thing I noticed about it that I really appreciate is that when one of them is disarmed and Bana is literally swinging with two arms his shield at Achilles' head, it's not like a normal fight where things are almost put into 1.2 times speed for martial arts movies to make it seem faster. It takes a while to swing that thing, and it's not necessarily easy to dodge, but it's compared to what we're used to in a Jackie Chan movie, it almost looks like it's slow motion. But the way that they presented it, which is real, the way they presented it, it felt real. You never found yourself saying, oh, he had all day to dodge that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I love everything about this fight. And I am a huge proponent of this movie. I mean, it had everything. This fight had everything for me.
Except for Debo getting knocked out with a brick.
Which I didn't need.
Yeah.
Need that. But God, it even had that great, when Achilles is just angry at the very beginning, after he says, now you know who you're fighting, he has that quote, you will not have eyes tonight. You will not have ears or a tongue. You will wander the underworld blind, deaf, and dumb, and all the world will know this is Hector, the fool who thought he killed Achilles.
If I was up on the wall and I heard that, I would have gone.
Yeah, well, if he was saying it to you, you would have been like out of your butt.
He knew he was going to win, though. That's the thing, though. That's he knew that Hector wasn't going to beat him, so he was just kind of showboating.
You know what I would say if I saw that?
What?
Time for messages. We'll see you in a little bit.
See ya.
Hey guys, I got a question for you.
Okay.
What's your favorite shark? Kyle?
Mako.
Oh, nice. John?
Street, tiger.
Right? Ooh, mine's San Jose.
Oh, okay.
So now, why are we talking about sharks?
Well, you said San Jose. That's where the thing, right?
Okay.
Okay.
Why are we talking about sharks?
Oh, we do a podcast.
Right. It's a different one than Word of the Bay.
We talk improv, right?
Okay. Walks. Yeah, we talk about that. We talk about a lot of stuff. Just kind of our daily lives and just,
games.
Movies.
They all involve sharks in some way.
Yeah, most of the time.
This has gone terribly.
Well, oh way.
OA? Wait, explain to me what OA means, please.
OA?
It's like kind of like a no way, but an okay way.
Okay, where can I find the podcast? Okay,
sharkdropper.com.
Sweet. Okay.
See it.
Welcome back to Movies, Films, and Flicks. We had a pretty good conversation there about law students and their association with dwarves and hobbits. They're pretty much the same thing, right, guys?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. You had to have been listening to the conversation for it to make sense.
Yeah, I mean, especially in bar fights, you know?
Yeah, one of these days, I'll keep recording like during our break so people can finally understand where we're coming from.
Can we do a podcast called The Break?
Yeah.
And it'll be like 20 podcast breaks.
We'll just make that an actual episode of Movies, Films, Flicks.
The Break.
Special bonus episode. All right. Mark, I think you have the final listener question for us today. Right?
I do. And the last question comes from Mikey. And he asks, what happened to that cave troll that had a battering ram on its head in the Battle of the Five Armies? So if you're
dead. It's dead.
No, it's not.
There's no discussion. No, that's a dead troll.
So if you miss it, there's a scene where there's a cave troll and he has a battering ram on his head and he runs into a wall, knocks the wall down, then falls back and kind of goes, ooh, and falls back unconscious. So this is what happens.
His body is limp.
The entire battle goes on, right? Everyone, they lose and stuff. He kind of wakes up later when his army's lost and no one's really focusing on him. He takes off the battering ram. He just runs to the nearest cave. And he lives a happy life.
See, I had like a similar theory. Like, I do agree that he just kind of quits the battering ram life. Because, you know, that you can't really sustain that. But
There's a movie about it. It stars Will Smith. He's a doctor. That cave troll has multiple concussive disorder.
Out soon. I feel like the cave troll like signed up with a temp agency, like he's working at like a, you know, doing like some type of data entry job somewhere, just like really enjoying life. Like, man, I don't have to, you know, use my head as a batting ram anymore. I could just, you know, just chill, talk to Janet during break.
I bet he's writing really big scrolls.
Yeah. When he goes home, he's working on like the next great American novel. It's his life's work.
He has like little glasses on. He has his tongue out and he's writing.
It's poor calligraphy with poor penmanship. Yeah. It's gigantic. You can see the error is even bigger.
He has a snifter of brandy like next to his side.
Yeah, but like a cauldron.
Yeah.
Okay. There is a scene in True Lies where Arnold Schwarzenegger is descending a rope upside down. And when he gets to the bad guy, he snaps the guy's neck. And then the guy just drops to the ground limp. That's this cave troll.
Well, if you think about it, he did have probably 700 pounds on his head. So when he did fall, it went really quick. You know what I mean? So when you're unconscious and you just fall, you're kind of, you know, you're going timber. But when he did it, it was like boom. Because all that weight. That weight wants to go down. So when he went down because of that weight. Hmm. He probably took a good nap. You know, he probably had to sit in like a dark room with his eyes closed for about a week afterwards.
Yeah.
He couldn't watch TV.
You think the
when Will is saying tell the truth in that trailer, he's thinking in his head about that cave troll patient.
Yeah.
You think that cave troll had to go through like a concussion protocol like NFL players have to do?
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, I'm sure like a goblin was out there with like a big stick putting it back and forth between his eyes. I'm sure, like, one of the wizards, like, Gandalf beamed some light into his eyes to check his pupils.
It's like, sorry, can't let you back in that battle. You clearly got a concussion. So.
Yeah, he had to pass protocol, Sauron protocol.
Yeah. Poor guy.
Yeah. But I think he's still with us.
You think so?
Yeah.
I do, too.
I agree. I think that's a dead cave troll.
No. It's two against one.
He's on break right now with Debbie. They're enjoying some pastries.
Talk about last night's... Master of None.
Yeah, the last night's Quidditch match.
Yeah. He's living a good life now.
Yeah. I think he has a really big apartment. He probably had to get like a loft.
I mean, solidly middle class. He's just kicking it.
Like, you know, if there was a recession, he has enough, you know, stored away.
Right.
Like, he has a nice crag side keep.
Yeah.
In Riverdale.
It's, you know, it's, it has some nice windows. It's on the water.
Yeah. He's working on his 401k.
Yeah.
You know, he's got things all figured out, man.
Yeah, he's happy. He's happy with his life. I mean, there's something.
That impact, I think, has a lot of difficulty figuring things out mentally.
Yeah, I mean, he does get, he does forget things. His short-term memory isn't that great. Right. But, other than that, he's doing the best he can.
He needs an abacus to tell you how old he is. Carry the one.
So, perfect. Yeah. I think, he's doing pretty well.
Yeah.
I think that's our answer.
Abacus is the answer.
I like the sound effect for the abacus. I'm going to bring up the abacus concept more often. Just for the sound effect. Yeah, this is going to be like it's like a radio show where we have these hot key sound effects. It's you.
All right, I don't use an abacus too often, but I don't think it sounds like that. You sound like a lizard. That's what it sounds like.
Well, that's
wasn't that the sound that little assassin arthropod made in Chronicles of Riddick?
Man, I don't even remember that. What?
Wasn't there some little scorpion thing?
Oh, that's in Riddick.
Yeah. Oh, in Riddick. I'm sorry. But like, didn't it make some little sound like that?
Nah, that was more like.
Oh, yeah. Huge difference.
Yeah, big time. There's
different chittering sounds.
And then there's.
All right. Let's continue on with the topic. Mark, I think you're up, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so we've talked about fights that move the plots along. We've talked about dramatic things involving families. You know, we've talked about really graceful triple 70-20 spin kicks, you know. And my fight is in the 2004 film The Punisher, where The Punisher opens up the door. He thinks it's going to be Rebecca Romijn. And it is a large 7-foot Kevin Nash in a red striped shirt. And from there, we get a very self-aware, cheeky, fun, and violent fight. And, like, I love how it opens up because he walks up. Thomas Jane, the Punisher, gets punched in the face, right? And then the Punisher closes the door. The Russian punches through the door, gets his arm stuck. And that's, like, the only time for the Punisher to, like, land some punches. And then from there... Like, every prop in the house gets used. Normally I hate it, but I hate it when the villain throws the good guy so the good guy can, like, grab a gun. It's like, oh, come on, just squish him. Like in Underworld Awakening, instead of, like, squishing Kate Beckinsale, the werewolf, like, throws her.
At the gun.
Yeah, at the gun, at every weapon known to man. But in this one, he's just kind of playing with his prey. Like, it's like a Shamu messing with, like, a little sea lion. And, it's just like, I love it. I love Kevin Nash. And like, he's huge. He's a 7-footer. And Thomas Jane in this movie, you think is big. But when you see them next to each other, you're like, oh my goodness, how is he going to get out of this? And like, they stab each other in the shoulders. My favorite part is Thomas Jane grabs a gun to shoot the Russian. And the Russian takes a barbell and busts the gun barrel. And they both
kind of. And bends it shut, right?
Yeah, it bends it shut. And then they both kind of look at it. Like, the Russian's probably happy about it. And the Punisher's like, ugh. And like, the whole fight, the Punisher's just like, moaning about it. He is hating every second of this fight. Like, but he's not like giving up. Like, I feel like he feels like he'll come through in the end, but he's just like hating it. Every second of this fight is just miserable for him.
It's interesting you say that, because when I rewatched this fight, it really stuck out to me, the facial expressions on the two combatants, how Kevin Nash is generally always enjoying himself as the Russian, and Thomas Jane is always just miserable, maybe even shocked that he's still alive throughout the whole fight.
He throws that grenade out. Like, he gets thrown into the bathroom, and he grabs a grenade. He throws it. There's a mechanism that closes the bathroom door. Oh, okay, so this is how it sets up. Thomas Jane has a crowbar, and he's hitting the Russian. The Russian grabs the crowbar and throws Thomas Jane away, which makes sense, so we can get control of the crowbar. Thomas Jane goes flying into a bathroom. He throws a grenade at the Russian and closes the door. But then the Russian uses the crowbar to hit the grenade through the window into the bathroom that the Punisher's in. And then the Punisher's like, ugh. And he dives into a bathtub and somehow survives. It's like, there's really – it doesn't have to be in the movie, this scene. It's not really like – it doesn't really have to be in there, but it's just so fun and self-aware, and it makes that movie. I feel like a lot of people are sort of jump on this Punisher bandwagon, and it's just fun. Like, it's one, it's just a fun, very violent, people get stabbed in the and this, he stabs a Russian in the shoulder, and the Russian just sort of smiles at him.
Yeah.
And like, it's just, I don't know, it's fun. It's really violent, but it's fun.
You know, I just want to say, like, you know, rewatching like these fights for the podcast today, it just, I didn't realize it till now, but like the Russian fight and the Punisher, it feels like basically the Craig Diebel fight taken to the next level.
Yeah.
You know, Thomas Jane is Craig, Kevin Nash is Debo, right?
Yeah.
And like in this case, like Thomas Jane is just getting beat to hell. But in this case, instead of a brick, he has like a pot of boiling pasta.
Oh gosh.
Yeah. It was just like, you know, this is kind of following like the same kind of the same, it has like the same parallels as like the Craig Diebel fight.
Craig used he used a brick, yeah, right? He used a 2x4, he used a trash can.
Oh yeah.
So there was a lot in there, and Debo literally used a car nearby to throw Craig into it. Whereas in this fight, you've got the grenade, the crowbar, the boiling water, the knife that gets used on both of them, a wall that gets knocked through, the refrigerator that Thomas Jane has his head slammed in, the stairwell Thomas Jane pulls the Russian down and they both fall down it, the grenade, for God's sakes, that dumbbell that comes into play with the gun that doesn't get to get used. Like, this was one of those everything but the kitchen sink, but oh wait, there was a scene where the Russians slammed Thomas Jane against the kitchen sink to strangle him.
Yeah. And then he drags him along it. And then the next shot, like you said, the refrigerator, it's just the Russian slamming a refrigerator door on the Punisher's head.
Okay. So remember, I made this big deal about the kind of like the cinematic event of the Troy fight, right? How there's the music, the buildup, the all that. Well, this didn't have the buildup. But in the most, as you said, it, through a filter of cheekiness and self-awareness, this had the opera music in the background.
Mm-hmm.
And meanwhile, across the hall, you have Thomas Jane's like awkward like neighbors who are trying to be his friend, even though he wants nothing to do with them, cooking dinner, and they kind of forced him into agreeing to coming to dinner. And while they're preparing it, and among them is a very awkward Ben Foster before he was
Ben Foster.
Like, they're dancing around like goofballs, singing along to the opera music, and the opera music is playing as all of these household implements and weapons are being used. And Thomas Jane, in all seriousness, should have had his skull crushed by Kevin Nash. Kevin Nash, by the way, for all you people who don't know, he is that giant guy they nicknamed Tarzan in the Magic Mike movies.
Yeah, and he was a wrestler. He was in John Wick.
That's right. Yes.
I just, I'm out of here. I just love, though, that Thomas Jane's face was just annoyance. Like, there wasn't much like fear. It was just like, like he was afraid for sure, but he was also
annoyed.
It's
like when you wake up with the worst hangover ever and you just now remember, oh fuck, I drank a whole lot last night. I'm sorry that I swore again, folks. It was just going with the hangover notion. That wasn't an intentional swear. But it's that you wake up like, oh God, I drank that much last night. It's almost like a humorous horror.
Yeah. It just, but like, normally I hate it when the guy gets thrown away, but it was just fun. Like, it was just like that scene with the weight where he crushed it and like the whole house gets used. It's just like a, I don't know, it's just a good fight. That's, there's no buildup. It's cheeky, but there's enough like violence in it. Like, the guy's head, the Russian dies, it gets his head spun around to his head gets neck snaps. He's not pulling a battering ram ogre. Like, he's dead.
So yeah, back in episode 33, we were knocking how in the remake of Halloween, the final fight was pretty much just property destruction in the old Mako's house. And it seemed totally pointless and everything. And it's like you're just destroying things to destroy things. Whereas in this fight, all the property destruction, because there's a lot of property destruction. A bathroom explodes. All the kitchen appliances are used as weapons. They break the awning of a staircase and fall down the stairs. Kevin Nash breaks through a doorway. And not just a door, then a whole new doorway with the drywall and interior and everything, like a monster. But when this happens, you're not rolling your eyes like they're just trying to make this seem like a big deal. It's hilarious.
Yeah, it's I don't know. I love it. I think it's the best part of the movie. And it's just I guess it's the case of like the unnecessary, unexpected action scene that works.
I'm going to say that's the best whole scene that works. But if I was to take my best reaction, it is tied with the scene where John Travolta throws his wife off the balcony. Because when that happens, I reacted the same way, just for less time.
He throws her in front of a train.
Oh, God.
And just if you guys are want to know, I did a post about John Travolta's villainous smoking. So go to Movies, Films, and Flicks and type in John Travolta smoking. You'll read the post. But yeah, so that's my Punisher fight. What do you got, Living Good?
So my third and final fight is Viggo Mortensen in Eastern Promises in what I will call one of the best naked fights ever to be filmed. And let's be clear, people, if you have not seen Eastern Promises, what makes this fight the most brutal actually doesn't have to do with the visceral knife work, anything about the choreography, them realistically stumbling around when they're tired and hurt. All this stuff was done perfectly, in my opinion. But what makes this fight so real and brutal is that Viggo Mortensen is legit naked. You see his little Viggo Mortensen bits. And it's not exploitative. It shows how vulnerable he is in this scene. We can all identify with it. Being naked and having someone attack you can just imagine.
There's like a nice contrast between this and History of Violence with David Cronenberg directed both. Like in History of Violence, the violence was so fast and quick. But in this one, it was like drawn out and painful.
Oh, God. And,
but one joke I want to get in. I was watching this, and I bet you JCVD was mad. Because like he was always attempting to do like naked fights, like, you know, Time Cop and like Kickboxer. Like he was always flashing his stuff. I bet he watched it and just went, I should have done this.
He doesn't do the splits.
Come on. Yeah. But there is a scene where Viggo throws like a standing like leg. He takes his left leg and kind of like picks it up and goes around with it. And you have to kick the knife out of the guy's hand. And you're like, oh, brother Viggo. But what impressed me the most was the first stab in this movie is like when he gets stabbed in the chest. It actually like feels like an actual stab to the chest. You know, yeah. You know, I've never been stabbed in the chest by, you know, angry mobsters. But when he gets stabbed once, you know, in the Fast movies, you know, in the Punisher and a lot of these movies, people get stabbed or hit with crowbars and they're fine. But in this one, he was kind of like it really took him out of the fight for a long time.
Yeah,
I'm comfortable saying that every slice, every stumble, every fall onto the floor. By the way, folks, this takes place like in a bathhouse sauna, and Viggo is naked, and his two assassins are fully clothed and armed. Yep. He's just got his towel. So, like, it's really a humble situation for a fight. But, I mean, God, like, every hit, you just saw it and felt it when they were stumbling around, when he's crawling on the tile floor. Like, you can almost imagine how that would hurt his elbows.
I didn't like how he threw that old guy at the bad guys, though. It's kind of like, come on. Yeah. Like, what did he do?
I think that was desperate, though. He just got thrown, like, across the room, sort of. And if he didn't do that, I think he'd be stabbed in the gut.
Yeah.
No, I agree with that old guy, though. I agree with one of your points, Lemmigood. The lack of clothing definitely adds to, you know, Viggo's vulnerability in this scene. Like, out of all the fights that we've discussed so far tonight, like this fight scene probably made me the most anxious to watch. Because, you know, you're just, like, you're completely naked, and you're taking on two dudes with, like, really big knives. Like you know, like, in boxing, like, they say, like, you need to keep your guard up. I was just screaming, like, dude, keep your guard down. Like, come on.
And, like, you know, what's weird is, like, nothing is really more vulnerable, but, like, in your head, you're kind of
like, come on.
That's got to affect you.
What are you doing throwing a kick out there? You're just like.
You know what? I'm not trying to be gross or silly right now, but, okay, we were all at some point around the ages of, say, 15 to 22. And at some point, maybe because of alcohol or college dares or something, you might have been naked somewhere. And when you are moving around naked and it's not simply in your bathroom in the shower, and you're moving faster than the pace of a slow walk, you feel yourself move. So I can only imagine that when throwing a crescent kick to kick a knife out of someone's hand and then kicking them in the stomach at regular speed while you are naked is inherently distracting to the kicker, because you feel one of the most sensitive parts of your body. You feel it moving around in a way that you shouldn't feel yourself when you are in a fight.
The only part I felt was disingenuous was when he did throw that crescent kick. Because I'm like, would Viggo Mortensen throw a crescent kick? Like, that was the only part that, like, kind of – that part took me out of the fight a little bit. Yeah. But other than that, man, I love some Cronenberg.
Would it make more sense when you consider at the end of the movie you found out that he was a special operative undercover?
Yeah. I just – like, the way he was fighting, like, I just – the crescent kick, I was like, what? Like that, like
he threw some very aware blocks.
Yeah,
like he was an excellent practical fighter.
And then at the end of it, he's crawling over the big guy. The big guy pulls a knife out of his chest, and then he gets, you know, stabbed in the eye for doing that. So I guess the moral of the story is, if you're laying there and you have a knife in your chest and the guy's going to roll past you, just lay there, because if you don't, you're going to get stabbed in the eye.
Dude, and when that was in his eye, Viggo like was quaking. It's not like he was shaking the knife around. Like, his whole body was quaking, so it made the knife move, and it made the guy's head move. And you heard this sound, and it sounded like a half-full jar of jelly with a knife being shaken around, and it, like, just swirled around. It sounded messy. That whole fight was just so rough.
Those brains were getting rattled with that knife.
Woo! Oh, man, this – uh-oh. I think that we are on to our last fight. And wait, hold on. I feel like we're channeling some greatness, because if I remember back to episode 27 of our podcast, we spent a lot of time talking about a particular actor and some of his silly fights.
But and then from there, what we built on was I was like watching his final fights again. And what I realized is, in all of JCVD's 80s to early 90s movies, his villains do incredibly stupid things. Like was it Tung Pao from Kickboxer? He's like, you know, JCVD's throwing the fight in Kickboxer. He can't get knocked out. Then when he turns it on, he destroys the guy. In Bloodsport, good old
Chong Li.
Yeah, Chong Li. He literally spends 30 seconds digging powder from his pants. He blinds JCVD, then he dances around for about 3 minutes. Like, everyone makes terrible decisions. But the worst decision, and so for me, you know, JCVD and these fight films, they all build to them fighting the big bad guy, the mythical bad guy. You know, whether it's The Quest or Street Fighter or all these movies, there's always the big fight at the end. But Death Warrant is the most disappointing of all of JCVD's final fights.
Because, as a huge Van Damme fan, I can comfortably agree with you that this is probably his most worthless final fight.
So the fight starts, right? JCVD's walking, right? And out of nowhere, this massive wrench, probably 2 feet long, flies out of the mist and hits JCVD like right in the face. You know, right off the bat, he should be dead, right? And then this guy, the Sand – I'm picking a lot of tall characters today, Debo, the Sandman, and the Russian. The Sandman picks up the wrench and just does some terrible wrench work on JCVD. I mean, we're talking – it's like not a real wrench. Like, this really –
This is not like the fast the Furious 7 wrench fight. Yeah. This is like I've never even used my arms before wrench fighting.
I have a plastic wrench, and I'm trying to make it look like a real wrench. And then for some reason, he hits JCVD in the head. And then he disappears, right? And then
he hides.
Yeah,
and wait, then, but then, like, JCVD is like down for the count, and the guy goes and hides.
Yeah, and then JCVD for some reason starts doing his blind acting, where he's like, where he has his hands out, like he's gonna like hug you. And
this was just a year after Bloodsport.
Yeah, and so he's like, and then the next scene he's running, right? And then he runs past the Sandman, who's playing hide and seek, right? And then he wanders around for a couple minutes. The Sandman catches him. The Sandman actually hits JCVD in the nuts, which I kind of appreciate, because JCVD does a lot of nut work, you know, hitting people right in the nuts. And then the Sandman grabs a light bulb. This guy is like 7 foot tall. He's a serial killer, one of the most brutal men in the world. And he grabs a light bulb and he breaks it. And his light bulb fighting is kind of like someone coming to hug you. Like, he kind of, like, he's holding it out there like he's going to walk up to JCV and hug him, but just picture a light bulb in his right hand. And so he's doing, like, stupid little thrusts. The fight scene goes on a little bit longer. And this is how the fight ends, right? You know, normally fighters have great, you know, finishing lines. People go, they die. But the Sandman walks in front of a boiler, right? He opens – or a furnace. He opens up the furnace door, which is – you know, the furnace is, of course, on fire, lots of fire. He stands in front of the open furnace door. JCVD does a spin kick, then moves forward about 5 feet in the air with a like a front kick, like a scorpion from Mortal Kombat, and he kicks the Sandman into the fire. So basically, the Sandman opened up a furnace door, stood in front of it, and got kicked into it. And that's
he may as well have just yelled, "This is Sparta," but yeah. Then been the guy who got kicked.
Yeah, and it's like... But then JCV does a spin kick from 5 feet away and just sort of floats towards him. And that's the end of it.
No. Then the guy crawls out of the fire.
Oh, yeah. But, like, it's just like, you're like, oh, like, and so you think about all these JCVD fight films, and you're like, you think about, I guess Universal Soldier was okay, but, like, Dolph, you know, threw him around a lot, and he never blocked. Dolph stood there for, like, Dolph stood still while JCVD kicked him 4 times in the face, and Universal Soldier didn't move. You know, the quest is terrible. He just threw him away. Lionheart, there's that guy Attila who just throws open hand slaps.
Well, now, I'm not trying to say that it didn't look stupid, but I'd like to defend Dolph and Universal Soldier for just a moment, because those guys were kind of like the T-800 in Terminator. Mm-hmm. They took time to process things. They didn't think straight, whereas Luke Devereaux, Van Damme's character, was kind of freed of that. So he was a free-thinking person, but Dolph Lundgren was kind of like a slow computer.
That makes sense, but because of the way I wrote my post, I'm going to disagree with you.
I mean, in the final fight, in the final fight of Universal Soldier, though, Lundgren wasn't like that. In the final fight, he had no excuse.
Yeah.
But earlier in the movie, before he was kind of freed in the same way that Van Damme's character was, earlier in the movie, it made total sense when that was happening, when Van Damme was totally outdoing these other guys.
And like, yeah, the final fight, and then the final fight is Cyborg. The guy, the Fender, pulls out a massive knife and does nothing with it. And like
he holds it out with his arms splayed out, just like the Sandman does in front of the furnace. And then Van Damme just jumps, spin kicks him. There goes the knife.
Yeah, and then Double Impact. You know, Bolo Young, who's a badass from Kickboxer, he just tries to hit JCVD with a barrel the whole time. So like all these fights that I thought were awesome, you come back and you rewatch them. All these final fights that the movie builds to them, but you know the worst, of course, was the Sandman, and is just hide and seek and terrible light bulb work.
And can we address that for a second? He unscrews the light bulb, right? When Van Damme is like hobbled, he could have kicked him in the face while he was bent over, like they do in Friday or any other movie, like kicking him while he's down. He unscrews the light bulb while Van Damme is totally hobbled. He breaks the light bulb. It's a light bulb, folks. It's a slightly larger than average household light bulb, but it's a light bulb. So he breaks it. So when he's holding it from the screw-in end, it's only extending like an inch from his hand. And he's swinging that thing like it's a knife, and somehow he's effective with it. Like he cuts Van Damme like 3 times. Ugh. Like that is not an effective weapon. It's not. And it would break every time he tries to cut him. It would break off.
Yeah, that fight, nobody thought this fight out. I feel like everyone was just on cocaine or something, and they wanted to get the hell out of there. But a lot of work went into that fight, but the choreography was just terrible.
Yeah, so that fight basically spanned no fewer than 3 sets.
Yeah, it was right? Like 8 minutes.
I mean, there's like the stairwell boiler scene thing, and then there's the furnace, and then there's this other area where he gets the light bulb. And all of a sudden, but we're talking about like Kevin Nash in The Punisher, and how there's the opera going on and this other stuff going on in the background with the dancing with people making dinner. Like all the stuff's going on. And in Achilles, there's the music and the sound of the humming steel on the impact. This movie had like – I can't even remember anything about the music.
No.
Was there music? Was it stock music? Like no one cared.
Yeah. And then
what was happening?
There's a 90-second scene where the – Sandman throws JCVD like 3 stories down, and this is basically JCVD laying there for 90 seconds while the Sandman walks down staircases
slowly.
Yeah,
you gotta like even slower than normal.
But for some reason, there's a scene though where the Sandman lands his nut shot, and they just cut to JCVD's or some stuntman's nuts is getting punched. It's like, oh gosh, that is, it's not a good fight. And but that's why I kind of, I don't know. That's why I picked it, because I kind of came across this theory of all of JCVD's final fights were rubbish.
So. You know what's funny is that the worse the Van Damme final fight is. Because if you were to think really quickly, what's the second worst final Van Damme fight? I'd say Bolo Young.
Was it double impact where Bolo Young tries to kill him with a barrel?
See, I like that fight a little bit. It's not a great like overall fight, but it has some cool elements. I'd say him against Attila and Lionheart.
Oh yeah, Attila just throws him.
But I'm gonna agree with you even still for the sake of this point too. Bolo Young 2 and Double Impact. So these three fights, think about the way Van Damme leaves these fights. He literally limps at the end of all three of those fights. At the end of his fights in all the other movies, he's not limping.
Nope.
So the final Van Damme fight. The worse off his character is as he walks away, as if he's limping from that terrible fight performance.
Like, he's lucky that the Sandman has terrible fight IQ. Like, he would have lost that fight about 7 times had the guy not played hide-and-seek with him.
Oh, God. And Van Damme's not a big guy, too. So, like, if you have him hobbled and he doesn't have all those fancy jump spin kicks – like, a regular-sized dude all of a sudden can do a lot of damage on someone who's, like, 5'10".
Yeah. Yeah, so those are – that's my cinematic fights, just good old JCVD.
All right.
I really want to give a little honorable mention to TV, because TV's been – has come such a long way in the last 10 years. In the last 5 years, we've been blessed for cinematic violence on TV. Game of Thrones, and now this new show, Into the Badlands.
And Daredevil.
Yeah.
And Daredevil. But, like, I don't watch that, as it turns out. But like,
oh, dude. Watch episode 2.
I've only seen episode 1.
It's yeah, watch funny. Episode 2. There's, like, a 5-minute.
Oh, you're talking about the hallway fight?
Yeah, there's a hallway fight that's, like, one shot. It's like the Old Boy, but a hall, like, it's a. Oh, we didn't talk about the Old Boy fight, but everyone knows about that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the hallway fight in Daredevil is, like, a 3-minute long tour de force.
It's amazing.
You got that. You got Game of Thrones. There was the Mountain versus the Viper.
Oh yeah.
The finale of a season ago. Like, that was an amazing event. If you guys don't know it, look it up. The Mountain final fight against the Viper. I mean, in the Badlands, the opening fight in episode 1 of the Badlands. I think they're on episode 4 now. It had this guy who actually reminds me a lot of Donnie Yen. But his fight choreography is a lot like Jet Li with all the limb cracking from like Fist of Legend. This guy is just – he's committing wholesale murder. I mean the fights are good. TV suddenly has good fights. 10 years ago, this wasn't possible. You couldn't flip on TV and find a good TV show with awesome fights. It didn't exist.
Yeah, it was basically just Tony Soprano whapping on somebody. Like, there wasn't like a big fight scene.
Backhanding someone was more convincing to me than anything from Kung Fu, The Legend Show, whatever, or Chuck Norris's Walker, Texas Ranger. That was garbage.
Yeah.
Like, there is no fighting in these shows.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, guys. Before we sign off, I want to ask like one final question. If we took all the combatants from all the fights mentioned tonight and Ooh. Locked them into a battle royale, who would come out the winner?
Achilles and Scott Adkins would decide not to fight each other.
I think it would come down to Achilles versus the Punisher.
You know, then again, Viggo really is the best grinder in a fight.
Yeah.
Like, because, like, even though, like, it would look like through the – it's like back when we were kids and we'd watch the Royal Rumble and, like, WrestleMania 20 or whatever, or WrestleMania 3 if you're older. Like, they'd have the Royal Rumble and there'd be, like, 20 wrestlers in there. And sometimes it's the guy who's sneaky or the guy who hides in the back that you think is losing that ends up winning. Like, he sneaks up on the two big guys, tire each other out, and he pushes them out of the ring. It's like, I wonder if Viggo Mortensen from Eastern Promises wouldn't be that guy. Like, he's just crawling around hurt, and then he stabs you in the ankle.
Is he naked the whole time?
Like the WWE Royal Rumble? Like, the one guy, like, always goes under the bottom rope, and he kind of wanders around the outside, and he can come back in?
Yeah, they kept it 30 seconds.
Yeah, that's like Viggo. Viggo just gets knocked out. He's like the guy from Hobbit. Like, he gets knocked unconscious and comes back at the end. But here, like, all right, so I think it would come down to Achilles versus Punisher. And because I'm annoyed at Achilles for beating Hector, I think the Punisher would grind it out.
See, this is how I see it going down.
Uh-oh.
I think it comes down to Achilles, I agree with you there, versus Craig. Like, they're like outside the walls of Troy. Like, Chris Tucker and like his dad, like, are on the wall.
Craig is, and Ice Cube is gonna beat Achilles stumbling around.
Hey, that rock.
Yeah, remember, no, like, yeah, that brick? The thing is, like,
that rock.
The thing is, like, he pulls out his gun, but then, like, his dad, like, on top of the walls, he's like, "What are you doing? Just fight him." He has that flashback. So he puts the gun away.
Wait, hold on. Viggo is crawling around, and he severs Achilles' tendon.
No. Like, Viggo's been taken care of. Like, it comes down to Craig and Achilles.
I want
to
hear this.
Yeah, right? Like, Chris Tucker and his dad lurk on top of the walls of Troy, like, cheering him on. You know, Craig throws away his gun. Then he gets in the fist fight with Achilles, but he just keeps hitting his shield. Whatever.
That would hurt so bad.
Exactly. And then, like, Craig rushes him, but then, like, Achilles steps out of the way, and then Craig falls on the rock. And then, like, Craig just grabs the rock and just, like, throws it at Achilles at his heel.
When you said the rock, I pictured Dwayne Johnson.
So the Achilles whacks. The rock. No, that is thrown by Ice Cube hits
him in his heel. So Craig inadvertently hits him in his, like, Achilles heel.
Achilles tendon.
So a missed throw, like, kind of like when Han Solo killed Boba Fett on accident. Like, yeah. Craig kills,
yeah,
takes out Achilles by accident.
Yeah, because he didn't know it, but, you know, he hit his heel, and that's his weak spot. So I was like, oh, man. Yeah, I think Craig from Friday wins it.
And then could we have Chris Tucker going, "Excuse me for my language, you just got knocked the fuck out."
Yeah.
That would annoy me about as much as when Darth Maul didn't win that fight in Phantom Menace.
I think all rules are out when you bring in Craig from Friday versus Achilles from Troy. And then I picture the troll waking up in the background, or the ogre waking up in the background, just going,
"Ooh, I'm out of here."
Yeah.
I'm surprised, Mark, that you didn't bring up a fight where Jim Varney is holding a jar of white fluid in front of a troll named Trantor. I'm surprised you could resist all those fights.
Bulgarian Miak. I wanted to expand this week. Like, my immediate thoughts were, like, They Live, Ernest Scared Stupid, but I'm like, I made a concerted effort to bring something new to the Bulgarian table today.
A lot of people knew of those fights already, though. I feel like the fights that we touched on today weren't really mainstream in a relative sense.
Yeah, and I hope for you guys listening that, like, you were like, "Oh yeah," like, you know what I mean? Like, that's, I think, what we're all aiming for, like, for people to be like, "Huh,
yeah,
you know, like that was a good fight." Like, yeah. I guess it's one thing to talk about great fights, and it's another one to talk about, you know, other fights that are still great.
Sometimes, you know, good fight scenes don't always happen in good movies, so a lot of times good fight scenes aren't always seen. You know. Yeah.
Undisputed 2 was not a good movie. Had great fun.
Yeah.
But I mean, watch them. Watch the third one. The third one's good too. And the Universal Soldier movies that are direct to DVD, they have great fight scenes between Adkins and Andrei Arlovsky.
Friday is a great flick, but it's not a good film. But that fight was like a film fight.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, guys. Before we sign off, do we have any plugs to make?
Movies, films, and flicks. If you like our podcast, head to iTunes. Give us a, subscribe, rate, review if you have time. We just want to hear back from you guys. And if you have any questions, find us on Twitter, find us on Facebook, message us on our website. We want to answer your random questions. So give us random questions. If you're listening to this right now and you're busy or in your car, don't text when you're driving, or do whatever. And just send us random questions. We want to answer them.
And of course, special thanks to Shark Dropper, who actually is our producer. And they produce a lot of their own podcasts that are well worth a listen as well. They've been around before us, in fact. They do everything from fiction to random rantings that are well worth a beer and a chat. And I'd also like to say, don't forget to tune into Blog Talk Radio. That's where you can live stream us all of our old episodes. Blog Talk Radio. Movies, films, and flicks with an X. And I'm going to give another thanks. I did it last week, but I'm going to say it again to Crash Palace Productions. Crash Palace has a podcast. They gave us a nice thank you for supporting them through media recently. And I just want to throw that back. They're pure horror, by the way, Crash Palace.
Cool. All right, guys. From my co-host, Mark Hoffmeyer.
Kurt Russell.
John Levengood.
Good night, everybody.
I've been your host, John Lawson. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you guys next time.
T-minus 5 seconds till shark drop. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Drop the shark! Go! Go! Go!
This podcast is a Shark Dropper Studios production.